Are you sure that General Solo kidnapped the princess? The Queen Mother asked over the holovid. Yes, Diachum, Isolde answered. A news network following the marriage story planted a fly-eye in the hallway leading to her quarters, and it filmed Leia leaving with the general. She walked like one who is dreaming, and Solo was armed with a gun of command. This General Solo is a desperate man, his mother said. I know what you're thinking. You want to rescue Princess Leia from his clutches yourself, but you are the Chumeda. If you place yourself in jeopardy, you will be betraying the hopes and dreams of your people. Isolde stared hard into his mother's face, trying to hide his intent, but it was no use. She knew him too well. I will hunt down General Solo, and I will bring home my bride. Isolde waited for his mother to explode, but the Ta'achum was not the kind of woman to show her anger. She said calmly, You disobey me lightly, but no matter what you think, your tendency toward selfless heroics is no virtue. I would cure you of it if I could. She did not speak for a moment, and Isolde waited for her to pronounce his punishment. I suppose you are too much like your father, she said simply. Leia awoke to darkness and tried to sit up. Her head hit something hard, and she had to lie back down. She felt a grate beneath her, and the familiar, subdued rumble of the Millennium Falcon's hyperdrive engines. It had been 5 years since she'd last hidden in the Falcon's smuggling compartment, and it still smelled the same. She rolled over, found something small and metal, and banged it against the roof. "Han Solo, you let me out of here this minute!" she shouted, feeling the thing in her hand vibrate and emit a hissing noise. Leia held it to her ear. Oh, great! An air exchanger. At least he didn't want me to suffocate. She banged on the ceiling again. What do you mean a sound couldn't be coming from here? She heard 3PO say. I'm sure I heard something banging right under here. The hatch flipped open, and Chewie and 3PO peered in. Chewie's eyes widened in surprise, and 3PO lurched back. Princess Leia Organa, why are you hiding in there? What do you think I'm doing in here, you turbo-powered dummy? Han kidnapped me. Oh, dear! 3PO and Chewie hurried to help her from the hold. Leia got up feeling a bit dizzy, and Chewbacca looked off toward the cockpit. The fur on the back of his neck had risen. For one moment, Leia thought that Chewie would rip off Han's arms in typical Wookiee fashion. Chewie stalked toward the cockpit, and Leia ran after him, saying, Wait, wait! Han was sitting in the captain's chair, his fingers flying over the instrument panels. The wash of stars in the view screens was a brilliant white, signifying that they were hurtling through hyperspace at the Falcon's top speed. Han ignored Chewie's growl.
So, did you figure out what that banging noise was?
He asked the Wookiee.
You bet he did, Leia said.
3PO shouted, I suggest you return the princess immediately before we all wind up in the brig.
Han turned, calmly swiveling in his chair, and put his hands behind his head.
I'm afraid we can't return just yet. We're locked on course for Dathomir, and the helm won't respond to any other orders.
All right. What is it you want from me? Leia asked, feeling defeated. 7 days. I want you to spend 7 days with me on Dathomir. You used to love me, and I'm not going to let you throw away our future just because some other prince comes along.
Other prince? Then you admit it? You are the king of Corellia?
I never said that.
What if I don't love you anymore? What if I've changed my mind?
The news nests are already reporting that I've abducted you. If you don't love me, then I'll bring you back in 7 days and I'll serve my time in prison. But if you do love me, then I want you to kiss Isolde goodbye and you marry me.
All right, Leia swallowed. You have a deal.
Princess Leia!
But I hope you like prison food.
Four days later, the Millennium Falcon dropped out of hyperspace above Dathomir, and the proximity indicator screamed in warning. Star destroyers littered the sky, while shuttles and barges plodded up from a small red moon in a solid line toward a huge mass of metal piping and struts, 10 kilometers of gleaming scaffolding that floated in space. Docked around it were thousands of craft. One superstar destroyer, dozens of old Victory-class models and escort frigates, thousands of box-like barges. For one moment, Han stared at them in awe, then muttered angrily, Trespassers. Leia drew a deep breath.
Well, Han, you've certainly struck the jackpot this time. Why, this planet must have more enemy fighters than a hut has ticks.
Han glanced over at Chewie. The Wookiee was trying to pull up the nav charts for the Otega star system. On the head-up holo display, two red fighters began vectoring up from a star destroyer.
Can of sarcasm, Princess, and get yourself up to the gunwale.
Han nodded out the view screen to the TIE interceptor screaming toward them. The interceptors were coming into visual range, and Han couldn't rely on stealth anymore. He reached up to switch on the signal jammers. Han glanced over at Chewbacca. The Navic computer had gone down. As he watched, the run lights for the hyperdrive motivator died, along with the rear targeting computer. They wouldn't be jumping to hyperspace any time soon. Chewie growled in terror, and Han dipped toward the glittering shipyard, diving toward a Kuat escort frigate. All that metal would play hell with the interceptor's sensors. Bolts of blue blaster fire ripped across the Falcon's prow, bounced off the hull as Leia returned fire. Huge beams of plasteel flashed past, and Han flipped the Falcon sideways to slip through the scaffolding. He locked his forward targeting computer onto the frigate's primary sensor array. Without active shielding on, the huge frigate was just another hunk of space debris, and Han's first blast enveloped the sensor array in blue lightning. Among the brightening mushroom clouds, Han reversed thrusters, fired two concussion missiles into the thin walkways that joined the frigate's monstrous engines with its forward arsenal. Chewie shielded his face in his hands as the Falcon slammed into the yawning hold of the frigate, and warning sirens screamed. The control panels darkened as the concussion shielding overloaded, then brightened again as it died. Both of the TIE interceptors screamed into the frigate and exploded. The corridor that the Falcon had crashed into filled with light and fire. That's a problem with those transparisteel windows on the TIE fighters, Han thought. The worthless things darken when they detect a blast, and then you can't see anything for the next 2 seconds. He'd counted on it. He flipped off his radio jamming, began shutting down the Falcon. Leia came running down the corridor.
What in hell do you think you're doing? You almost got us killed.
Listen, Han gestured for quiet. Between the concussion of the torpedoes and the fighters and a few well-placed ion blasts, the frigate's orbit was already destabilizing. The ship was peeling away from the docks as Dathomir's gravity well sucked it down.
Oh, great, Leia said. I'm supposed to be happy that we're going to crash into the planet instead of blow up in space?
No, no. Our concussion shielding should have kept us from damaging the Falcon too badly. Now that our sensor jamming is off, Chewie should be able to get the navicomputer back online. Meanwhile, Zinj's Navy thinks we crashed, and as the frigate drops toward the planet, we'll quietly move out of their interception range for 10 minutes or so. Plenty of time for us to plot a course. Then we'll just casually ease our way out of here and head for home. Trust me, I've done this before. Go ahead, Chewie. Turn the navicomputer back on. Show her.
Chewie shot Han a nasty look and flipped the switch. The monitor stayed dim. Chewie frantically began testing other switches. The forward sensor arrays had been smashed during the crash, and the concussion shielding was gone.
Hang on, folks. It's gonna be a rough ride down.
At Han's apartment on Coruscant, Luke felt the walls, then touched the pillow on Han's bed. He could feel Han's desperation on the pillow, and something else, a trace of manic glee, of hope. Such strong emotions carry a unique scent, and Luke ran his fingers along the wall, following the scent from the apartment and out into Coruscant's long avenues. Hours later, he found himself in the underworld, in an ancient gambling hall. The manager of the place told him of the game Han had played with the Drachmarian warlord Omug, and directed him to a room where the Drachmarian had gone for a card game. 3 humans stood over her. 2 of them held her pinned to a gaming table, while the 3rd worked desperately to pull off her helmet, open her to the oxygen atmosphere that would surely poison her. The Drachmarian fought them, digging into their arms with her talons.
Let her go, Luke ordered them.
You stay out of this, one of the men said. This creature has information that could lead us to a woman who's been kidnapped.
This Drachmarian is a citizen of the New Republic, and if you do not take your hands off her, I will take your hands off you. Luke swung the lightsaber threateningly. A female voice spoke behind Luke. What is going on here? All 3 of Omag's attackers folded their arms, bowed their heads.
Oh, Queen Mother, we found the Drachmarian warlord as you requested, but she has been loath to answer us.
Luke turned to look at their leader. She was a tall woman, wearing a gold circlet and a golden veil. Her long, flowing dress could not disguise her shapely figure. The Queen Mother grunted in disgust.
Get out, all 3 of you. She turned to Luke. You must be Luke Skywalker, she said. I owe you a debt of gratitude for stepping in here.
She gestured, and two of her guards hurried to the fallen Drachmari and made sure her gas mask fit snugly over her snout.
"I'm terribly sorry," the Queen Mother said to the Drachmarian. "I'm Ta'achum of Hepis, and I asked my men to find you, but I did not order them to question you like this. Name whatever punishment you think just."
"Make them breathe methane."
"It will be done." She paused a moment. "You already know why I have come. I need to know where Han Solo is."
Omag glanced at Luke.
"Is this what you want to?"
"Yes," Luke answered. The Drachmarian studied Luke a moment.
"You have saved my life, Jedi. Name your reward."
"As my reward, I ask that you not reveal the name of the planet to anyone, but that you look into my eyes and think of the name." Luke let the Force connect him to her and distinctly heard the name of the planet in his mind.
"Dathomir."
He recalled the hollow of Yoda saying,
"We struggle to free the Chunthar from Dathomir."
Then he heard the Queen Mother announce, "Our fleet will leave tonight for Dathomir."
She must have seen Luke's startled look, for her voice took on a note of confidence.
"Omag made the mistake of running a course check on her Navi computer."
The Falcon eased free of the wreck of the frigate and fell, tumbling as it dropped. For a moment they would see the star and moons that looked very distant now. Then they'd glimpse the planet. There seemed to be a city on the horizon, a slight glowing, maybe 150 kilometers off. Han pulled them out of the dive. The sky filled with brilliant white light as the frigate crashed. And the Falcon whisked over the treetops for a second, skimmed over a mountain lake, and dipped in under the forest canopy. They skidded through some thick underbrush and came to a jarring halt. Han looked up through the view screen at the tall trees.
"Well, this is the place." He shut down the Falcon.
"You think we made it?" Leia asked. "Are you sure the Imperials didn't pick us up on their scanners?"
"I'm not sure of anything," Han said. "But if Zinja's men follow Imperial procedure, they'll come down here to check out that slag heap of a frigate as soon as it cools. At the very least, we'll need to get out and cover our skid marks, hide the Falcon. Believe me, we got plenty of company coming, and unless you want to throw a picnic for them, we'd better get to work."
The four of them went down into the hold and got out the camouflage nets. Then they stepped outside. The air here was warmer than Leia had expected, the stars fiercely bright. The four took out the camouflage net, a 35-meter-long piece of photosensitive netting attached to an activating strip. They pulled off the activating strip, then placed the netting over the leafy soil for a minute so that it could take a picture of the ground. Then they flipped the netting right side up and covered the Falcon. Generally, the chameleon-like quality of the netting would hide the ship from even the closest flyover. The little group hid in the Falcon for the rest of the day. Dozens of times during the early morning, they heard fighters flying over, skimming the treetops. Early in the afternoon, the fighters apparently gave up the hunt. As the sun began to set, Han got up and stretched.
"I'm going to go out and have a look around, make sure that Zinja's men have left."
Half an hour later, Leia went out to look for him. She found Han only 100 meters from the ship, standing by the muddy bank of a lake, watching the sun set in a wash of vibrant reds and yellows with muted purples.
"Well, I guess this is the end of our first day on Dathomir," he said. "It's been kind of uneventful.
Do you love me yet? Are you ready to marry me?"
"Oh, please get off it, Han, and get back here undercover."
"It's all right. I have reason to believe that Zinja's troops won't be landing here anytime soon."
"What could possibly give you that idea?"
Han pointed down at the muddy shore of the lake.
"They wouldn't want to hang around after dark with these near."
Leia stifled a cry. What she had taken to be a mud puddle was, in fact, a footprint made by something incredibly big with 5 toes. The Queen Mother, Ta'achum, had asked Luke to come dine with her and her son aboard her ship, the Star Home. At the dinner table, Isildur sat with his mother and Luke, feeling glum, disappointed. In the course of a few hours, his mother had achieved something that Isildur had found impossible: learn where Han had taken Leia. Now Isildur was waiting for his mother to revel in her victory, make some seemingly inconsequential but pointed remark designed to show the superiority of the female intellect over that of a male. The women of Hapes had an old saying, Never let a man become so deluded as to believe that he is the intellectual equal of a woman. It only leads him to evil. And Ta'achum would never do anything that might lead her son to evil. Still, she remained remarkably cordial over dinner. She talked with Luke Skywalker, laughed disarmingly in all the right places. She kept her veil down, yet managed to be seductive. Isolde wondered if the Jedi would sleep with her. It was obvious that she wanted him. And like all the mothers before her, she kept her age well. She was very beautiful. But Skywalker seemed not to notice either her beauty or her veiled attempts at seduction. "It must be fascinating to do your kind of work," Ta'achum said to Luke as they finished the last course. "I've always been very provincial, staying close to home, but you, traveling across the galaxy, searching for records of the Jedi." "I really haven't been doing it long," Luke said. "Just the past few months. I'm afraid I haven't found anything of value. I'm beginning to suspect I never will." "Oh, I'm sure there are records on dozens of worlds. Why, I remember when I was younger, my mother once granted refuge to some Jedi, a group of 50 or so. They hid out in the ancient ruins of one of our worlds for a year, running a small academy." Isolde could see a sudden, unreasoning hunger in Luke's eyes, as if he wanted to discuss this more. Ta'achum offered, "When this is all over and you've rescued Leia, come to Hapis. One of my counselors, who is getting quite old now, could show you the caves. You would be welcome to keep anything you find in them." "Thank you, Ta'achum." Luke stood. "I think I'd better prepare to go now. But before I do, may I ask you one more small favor?" Ta'achum nodded, inviting him to ask. "May I see your face?" "You flatter me," Ta'achum said, laughing lightly. Luke did not know he was asking for something that was forbidden. To Isolde's surprise, his mother pulled up her veil. For one eternal moment, the Jedi gazed into her startlingly dark green eyes, the cascades of red hair, and held his breath. In all of Hapis, few women could vie with the Ta'achum for beauty. Then Ta'achum dropped her veil. Luke bowed low, and in that moment his face seemed to go hard, as if he had peered into Ta'achum and did not like what he had seen. "Now I see why your people venerate you," he said casually, and he left. The hair prickled on the back of Isolde's neck, and he recognized that something important had just happened. When Isolde saw that Luke was well out of hearing range, she asked, "Why did you tell the Jedi that lie about an academy? Your mother hated the Jedi as much as the Emperor ever did, and she would have relished hunting them down." "The Jedi's weapon is his mind," Ta'achum warned. "When a Jedi is distracted, when he loses his focus, he becomes vulnerable."
"So you plan to kill him?"
Ta'achum rested her folded hands on the table.
"We don't really want to see the Jedi rise from their graves, do we? The first band was troublesome enough.
I won't have our descendants bowing to his, ruled by an oligarchy of spoon-benders and readers of auras."
She shot Isolde a glare, as if daring him to challenge her reasoning. Isolde nodded.
"Thank you, Mother. I think I had best get ready for my journey."
He rose from his chair, hugged his mother, and kissed her through the veil. He knew that he should have left Starholm immediately, headed for his own ship. Instead, he hurried down to the guest docking bay, found Skywalker at his X-wing fighter preparing to disembark for Dathomir.
"Do you think Leia is in danger?" he asked.
"Yes," Luke answered. "I felt a sense of urgency for her. That's why I went to the underworld." Isolde made up his mind.
I think you are a good man. Will you take me to Leia? We might even be able to reach Dathomir before Solo."
As his battle dragon, the Song of War, prepared to drop out of hyperspace, Isolde was full of hope. Luke had managed to pilot them to Dathomir in 7 days, saving 10 days from the shortest route that the Hapan astrogation computers could devise. Yet when they dropped out of hyperspace, his heart left him. 10 kilometers of shipyard docks were being guarded by 2 Imperial Star Destroyers and a host of ships in dock. All across the battle dragon, crew members rushed to their posts. Luke Skywalker stood at the bridge, gazing at the viewscreen. He pointed to a frigate plunging into Dathomir's atmosphere, flames shooting out of its sensor towers.
"There. Leia's in that burning ship. I've got to get down there."
Luke rushed off, heading for his fighter. Already, Isolde could see dozens of old Imperial Thai fighters launching from Zinj's Star Destroyers.
"Launch all fighters!" Isolde ordered. "Knock out that Super Star Destroyer at the docks, along with anything else you can get. I want this to be messy."
The ion cannons opened fire as torpedoes screamed from their launch tubes.
"Captain Estarta," Isolde said, glancing at his bodyguard, "take over the attack. I'm going down to the planet."
"My lord," Estarta objected, "my job is to protect you."
"Then do your job well. I need enough confusion to cover my escape. My mother's fleet won't be here for 10 days. I'll be monitoring radio signals from the planet. If I can, I'll rendezvous with you at the first sign of your attack."
Reaching the flight deck where Skywalker was already powering up an X-Wing, not his own, Isolde noticed, Isolde grabbed a flak jacket, helmet, and blaster.
"Problems with your fighter?"
Isolde shouted across the room. Luke nodded.
Weapons didn't check out. Can I borrow one of yours?"
"No problem,"
Isolde said. The crew saw him and began readying his own fighter, Storm.
"Skywalker, I'm coming with you. I'll be watching your tail."
Luke gave a thumbs up. Isolde ran across the flight deck, leapt into Storm's cockpit, and fired up the control panel. Once in space, he could more easily see how the battle was going. The Star Destroyers had backed off and spread apart so that Astarta was forced to choose one of them as a primary target. Instead, she had taken the battle dragon over the docks at the shipyard and had begun pummeling a helpless Super Star Destroyer that waited for repairs, doing more damage to the costly machinery in one strafing run than she could ever have accomplished in a pitched battle. Neither of the active destroyers was hurrying to stop her. Two of the Victory-class destroyers at the docks must have been partly operational, for TIE fighters and old Z-95 headhunters were scrambling from their decks. The skies were littered with swarming fighters, chunks of twisted shrapnel, and scattering debris from destroyed ships. Isolde flipped a switch on his radio, let it search the Imperial frequencies until he could hear the chatter of the enemy fighters. Luke Skywalker circled out past the edge of the Hapen Dragon, and Isolde followed the Jedi out, closing on his tail.
"I'm right with you,"
Isolde called over his comm. Luke accelerated to attack speed, spun out toward a phalanx of 20 incoming Z-95 headhunters. Isolde followed at his right wing. Checking his head-up display, he noticed something odd and called out,
"Luke, your deflector shields aren't up."
Then the headhunters were on them, blaster fire lighting up the skies. Isolde picked a target, fired simultaneously with ion guns and a homing missile. From the corner of his eye, he watched Skywalker take a hit to the top right wing and fall into a spin. Skywalker's ship began tumbling through space, breaking apart. Isolde silently prayed, then aimed his life sensors at the cockpit. Nothing. Skywalker was dead. Isolde cursed and knew that he could do nothing now but feign his own death. He ejected a thermal detonator out the back of his ship. A brilliant explosion pierced the sky behind him, and he flipped off his transponder, powered down, and let the storm drift and fall beside Luke's ship. He pulled a reflective blanket from underneath his console. Enemy sensors would register that his body had cooled, showing him as dead. Isolde watched Skywalker's corpse tumbling in his ship. After all the help the Jedi had given, he was dead. Isolde gritted his teeth, pulled the blanket over his head, and waited to make planet fall. Leia pushed through a tangle of creepers under the cover of darkness and looked up a steep slope to the top of the plateau. She and Han had decided to make their way to the city, whose lights they had noticed when they were plummeting toward the planet. There, the four spacefarers hoped to find some parts they could use to repair the Falcon. So far, they had not run into the huge creatures whose prints they'd spotted. Up on the plateau, in the brush beyond her line of sight, something roared and leapt from the other side of the hill, landing in thick brush, then clambered off through the trees. Leia stopped, heart pounding.
"What was that?" Han asked.
"Something alive, about the size of the Millennium Falcon, I'd say. I'll bet it had 5 toes. They began scrambling up the steep hill, grasping roots and the trunks of small trees to pull themselves along. Distantly over the mountains, borne on a slight breeze, came a roaring cry that shook Leia's bones.
"It's coming back," Han said with certainty. "Come on, come on, you guys, let's have an organized retreat here."
But Chewbacca took off down the valley, followed by 3PO, who dashed through the brush as fast as his metal legs would move. They were running toward 2 pillars of stone that pointed upward like jagged canines. Chewbacca stopped, wavering in his steps. Behind the stone pillars stood 4 Imperial walkers. Floodlights blinded them. freezing them in their tracks.
Halt!
The order came over a loudspeaker, accompanied by the boom of blaster cannons that exploded at Chewie's feet.
All of you, drop your weapons and place your hands on your heads.
Leia dropped her blaster rifle. Chewie and Han did the same. Better this than whatever lived out in those mountains. Two of the walkers circled the pillars, their searchlights played through the trees, then turned back to Leia and the others.
You, droid, pick up the weapons and drop them over the side of the trail.
3PO did as he was told. Han's eyes smoldered as he glared at the walkers. All four were two-person affairs, scouting models, the only size small enough to maneuver through this mountainous terrain.
Turn around and head back the way you came,
one pilot shouted.
Where are you taking us?
Han demanded.
By what right? This is my planet.
You're in Warlord Zinja's territory now, General Solo,
the pilot said.
Start marching!
They had been marching for 2 hours when the attack came. 1 second they were walking along, and the next Leia heard heavy footsteps rushing behind. The two walkers on the flanks got tackled by creatures much taller than the 7-meter transports. Something enormous behind Leia smashed a walker using a huge club, grabbed the walker next to it, and tossed all 3 tons of its armored hull toward a rock where it crashed in a heap. A gunner kept firing into the air as the beast clubbed his walker, smashed it again and again, and in the gruesome blue actinic flashes, Leia saw the beast, and her heart nearly stopped. It stood 10 meters tall and wore a protective vest of woven ropes with bits of stormtrooper body armor tied on it. Yet in spite of its attire, there was no mistaking those oddly grotesque arms, the curved fangs, the bony headplates. She had seen one before. It had been smaller than the ones here, perhaps only a juvenile, but it had seemed enormous at the time. In the prison beneath the palace of Jabba the Hutt. Rancors. Han yelled, turned to run, and tripped. Chewbacca took off through the woods, and one rancor chased him and threw a weighted net. The net knocked the Wookiee to the ground. In pain, Chewbacca remained on the ground, holding his ribs. Leia stood, heart drumming, frozen with fear. Yet the sight of the enormous beasts was not what frightened her. On each of the 3 giant rancors sat a woman. One of the riders wore a high-collared tunic of glittering red scales, and over it a supple robe made of leather or heavy material. On her head she wore a helm with fan-like wings. Leia knew she was in the presence of someone strong in the Force. The woman swung an ancient Force pike overhead, motioning for Leia and the others to stay. "Who are you?" Leia asked.
"Is this how you form your words, off-worlder?"
The woman was using the Force to communicate. Leia nodded. The woman gave orders to her 2 companions. One of them scurried down from her rancor and began gathering weapons from the corpses of Zinja's troops, while the other urged her rancor over to Chewie. The rancor untangled the injured Wookiee from the net and carried him in one hand.
"It's okay, Chewie, they're friends,
I hope," Han called.
The woman with the Force pike leaned over Leia, pointed at Han and 3PO.
"Keep your slaves marching, off-worlder," she said. "We will take you to the sisters for judgment."
Isolde reached under his fighter's control panel and pulled out a survival kit. Above him, on the demolished X-Wing Luke had piloted, the parachute bolted onto R2's ejection seat opened, and the droid jerked upward. Isolde cracked the transparasteel bubble of his fighter, let the wind catch it and fling it open, then leapt from the ship, soaring in freefall. But when it came time to send up his parachute, he flipped the release, and nothing happened. He yanked the emergency cord and flailed his arms, shouting. Miraculously, some type of repulsor lift field hit him, slowed him, so that he dropped softly as a feather. When Isolde landed, he saw that his ship had also settled quietly to the ground. Then he saw something above. Luke Skywalker sitting with his legs crossed, eyes closed in concentration, and arms folded, floating to the ground. When the Jedi had floated within inches of the ground, he opened his eyes and jumped, as if dropping from a ledge.
How did you do that?
Isolde asked.
I told you, Luke said. The Force is my ally.
But you are dead. I saw it on my scopes.
A Jedi trance. It was necessary to fool Zinji's men.
Luke gazed up into the night, and Isolde followed his line of sight. Far above, he could make out the warships, tiny ships bursting into flames like distant stars gone nova. Part of him wondered how Astarte and his troops were faring in the battle, and he wished that he could be up there in the fighter protecting the ship.
"You feel the pull, the call of the hunt," Luke said. "That's the dark side of the Force calling you."
Isolde stepped back, fearing that Skywalker had somehow learned to read his mind. But Luke continued, "Tell me who you hunt."
"Han Solo."
"Are you sure? You have hunted other men before. What was the man's name? What was his crime?"
"Haravan. He killed my brother."
"You must forgive him. Your anger burns in you, a black spot on your heart. You must forgive him and serve the light side of the Force."
"What does it matter?" Isolde asked. "I'm not like you. I don't have any power. I will never learn how to float through the air or raise myself from the dead."
"You have power," Luke answered. "You must learn to serve the light within you, no matter how dim it may seem." They set out, heading toward the distant mountains, along a tedious route that R2 could navigate, until they reached a desert that ran over the rolling hills. As the sun began to rise over the desert, casting an ethereal blue glow, they stopped to rest in the cool recesses of a crevice of rock. Nearly half an hour later, Isolde heard the earthquake. It started as a distant rumble, and the earth began to shake, and chunks of dirt broke from the sides of the crevice. Suddenly, a huge shadow flitted overhead, then another and another. Large reptiles with pale blue scales were leaping over the crevice.
"Stampede!"
Isolde threw his arms over his head. Hundreds of reptiles leapt over the crevice. The roaring quieted after several moments, and one huge reptile jumped into the crevice, not a dozen feet from them, stood panting, loose folds of light blue flesh jiggling at its throat as it studied them. The beast had blood-red eyes and black teeth shaped like spades. The scales at the top of its head were slightly iridescent, almost lavender.
"Don't worry. We won't harm you," Luke said to the creature.
He poured some water from his canteen into his hand and let the beast lap it up with its long black tongue.
"What are you doing?"
Isolde said.
"That thing is drinking all our water."
"It's 80 kilometers through the desert to the mountains, and there's no water between here and there. But every evening these creatures run to the hills to feed, and every morning they run back here to hide from predators in the day's sun. They call themselves the Blue Desert People. Tonight they will carry us to the mountains. We won't need all this water." That evening, just before the sun began to set, the beast raised its head, made a honking noise, and suddenly the Blue Desert People were everywhere, climbing out of their holes. When the sun had dropped below the mountains, they balanced themselves on the backs of the lizards. The Blue Desert People bellowed and raced across the sand on their powerful hind legs. By early nightfall, they reached a wide, muddy river where tall grasses and reeds grew in the shallows. Birds with long necks and leather wings swooped low over the river in the moonlight, taking long drinks. Here, the Blue Desert People stopped to water and feed among the rushes.
"This is where we get off," Luke said, and they dismounted.
At dawn, the morning fog blowing off the muddy river obscured Luke's vision so that he could not see more than a few meters ahead. The trees along the river had all burned and rotted so that limbs pointed up out of the fog like crooked fingers. Isolde said, "What's that?" Jutting above the fog in the river sat a huge metal platform leaning at an odd angle. Beyond the platform was an enormous exhaust nacelle, rotted through so that Luke could see parts of the heavy turbo generator still intact. "It looks like an old spaceship crashed here," Luke said. He started to turn to leave when the name on the rusted exhaust nacelle caught his eye.
Chunthar.
His mind did a little flip as he realized that it was not a race of people that Yoda had tried to free from the planet hundreds of years ago, but the spaceship.
"We've got to get out there," Luke said.
Isolde waited on the shore while Luke took R2 and poled out to the wreck on an ancient log raft that they found in the brush. This was no ordinary wreck. There were no blast marks to show signs of battle, no crumpled structure to indicate a violent landing. Rather, it seemed that the ship must have developed a technical problem and floated down peacefully. Luke looked in at one transparasteel window. Workbenches stood at the center, and several benches held rusted mechanical parts, corroded power cells, focusing crystals, handles for lightsabers, tools to make weapons that only a Jedi could use. Luke's heart pounded. A Jedi Academy, he realized, and everything suddenly made sense. I searched 40 planets and never found a sign of an academy, because the Jedi Academy was in the stars.
Of course they needed a spaceborne academy. With so few people strong enough to master the Force, the ancient Jedi would have needed to scour the galaxy hunting for recruits. He pulled out his lightsaber, flipped it on, and began cutting through the transparasteel. Luke was so involved in using his lightsaber to try to break into the ship that he almost did not feel the power behind him rushing toward him. He turned just in time to see a woman with long reddish-brown hair dressed in tawny hides coming at him. She kicked at him with a leather boot, and before he could respond, she swung a club, smashing his artificial right hand hard enough so that the circuit shorted and the lightsaber spun away. She kicked at his belly, and Luke dropped and rolled, using the Force to call his lightsaber back to his left hand. The girl stopped, and her mouth dropped in astonishment.
"How can you work the magic, being only a man?"
the girl said.
"The Force is in us all, but only those who are trained can become its masters."
The girl studied him skeptically.
"You claim to master the magic?"
"Yes," Luke said.
"Then you are a male witch, a Jai, from beyond the stars?"
Luke nodded.
"I have heard of the Jai," the girl said. "Grandmother Rell says that they are unbeatable warriors, and since they battle for life, nature cherishes them, and they cannot die."
The girl smiled at him and began chanting, and the look in her eyes shocked him. He had never seen such fierce lust.
Wait a minute. You can't be thinking...
Lightning crackled overhead, and a dozen small boulders blasted toward Luke, hurtling through the air. Luke swung wildly with his lightsaber, bursting several pieces of rock, but one caught him in the chest, throwing him backward.
"Repulsed by the witches," Yoda had said.
He hadn't even felt her move toward him, yet her club smacked his skull, and he reeled to the ground. Groggily, he realized that the girl was straddling his chest, locking his arms with her strong legs. She shouted triumphantly,
"I am Tenennial Jo, a daughter of Alia, and you are my slave!"
In the early morning, Han and the others struggled up a treacherous flight of steps carved into the sheer mountain cliff. Turning one last corner, they found themselves looking down into an oval-shaped valley. Shacks with thatch roofs dotted the valley, and checkerboard squares of green and tan showed growing crops. Men, women, and children worked the fields. A large stream ran through the fields to a small lake, then tumbled over a cliff into the wilds below. Above the narrow valley, carved into the basalt, were fortifications, turrets and parapets and windows. The women had placed slabs of plasteel from the hulls of broken spaceships over the rock like a mosaic. A couple of scavenged blaster cannons pointed out from the mountain stronghold. When they arrived at the fortress, Leia was led into the shadows of an open doorway, while Han was asked to wait below near the circle of huts. Finally, a dark-haired woman astride the neck of a rancor rode over to him.
"My name is Demaya. You will follow me. Your friend Leia has been pleading your case to the Singing Mountain clan. She has won your freedom, but now your future must be decided."
Demaya led him up toward the fortress, and just before they reached the landing of the stone stairway, a group of strangers came up from outside the valley. 9 women with strangely blotched purplish skin. They did not wear exotic helms like the warriors, but dark, shaggy, hooded robes crudely woven from plant fiber and covered with trail dust. Han watched the warriors guarding the trail and knew that the hooded women were their enemies. Demaya got off her rancor and led Han up the steps toward the fortress. The 9 women watched them pass, studying Han intensely. Their leader, an older woman with graying hair, had glittering green eyes, and the hollows of her cheeks were a sickly yellow hue. She smiled at Han, causing him to shiver.
"Tell me, off-worlder, where your ship is," she said.
Han's heart hammered.
"It's, over..."
He started to point, and the messenger whirled violently on her rancor.
"Tell her nothing!"
Demaya's words were like a knife slicing through some invisible cord that held Han's throat. He realized that the old woman had used Luke's Jedi trick of commanding those with weak minds. His face must have reddened, for Demaya said,
"There is no need to be embarrassed. Barathar has a powerful gift for forcing minds."
The 9 hooded sisters followed as Demaya led Han into the fortress. The fortress turned out to be even more hammered than Han had seen from below. A web of cracks ran throughout the patchwork of plasteel. 2 guards at the door led the way inside.
Han followed them into the dark chambers of the fortress, which was honeycombed with halls and stairways. The walls were covered with thick tapestries and lit by sconces. They entered a corner room. The huge room was nearly triangular in shape, with six openings looking out to the prairie. Blaster rifles lay stacked near each window, flak jackets had been tossed in piles on the floor, and a solitary blaster cannon poked out toward the mountains to the east. The room was filled with a dozen women in glittering robes of reptile hide, all wearing helms. Near the back of the crowd, dressed as one of the warriors, Han saw Leia. One of the women stepped forward.
"Welcome, Barissa,"
she said to the old crone, ignoring Han.
"On behalf of my sisters, I, Mother Ogwin, welcome you to the Singing Mountain clan."
"You needn't bother with formalities," Barissa said. "The Night Sisters have come for General Solo and the other off-worlders. We captured them first, and by rights they belong to us."
"We found no Night Sisters with them," Ogwin answered. "Only Imperial stormtroopers trespassing on our land. I'm afraid we can't honor your claims to ownership."
"The stormtroopers were our slaves, as you well know," Barissa answered. "They were bringing the off-worlders to prison for interrogation."
The woman called Ogwin said, "If you only want to interrogate General Solo, then perhaps I can help you. General Solo, why did you come to Dathomir?"
"I own this planet and everything on it," Han said.
He fumbled in his pouch for the deed, found the box, and pressed its switch. The hollow of Dathomir appeared in the air above his palm, his name clearly registered as owner.
"No!"
Barissa waved, and the box flew from Han's grip, tumbling to the floor.
"That's right," Han said, "and I want you and your Night Sisters off my planet."
Barissa glared at him.
"Gladly. Provide us a ship and we will leave."
"Enough of this," Ogwin said. "You have your answer, Barissa. Tell Githzerian that General Solo will remain with the Singing Mountain clan as a free man. He has won his freedom by saving the life of a clan sister."
"You lie," Barissa said. "Whose life has he saved?"
"He saved the life of clan sister Tandir."
The women of the Singing Mountain clan parted, revealing Leia in the shadows. She wore a tunic of shimmering red scales and a helm of black iron decorated with small animal skulls. Barissa shouted,
"Githzerian, we have found the off-worlder. He has a starship, but the clan sisters will not give him to us."
Han could hear a humming in his ears, almost as if a fly buzzed within his skull. The hair rose on the back of his neck, and he knew that no matter how far away this Githzerian was, she had heard Barissa's call. As one, the Night Sisters turned and leapt through the open windows, their black robes flapping. Han's heart skipped a beat at the thought of those bodies smashing on the rocks below. But for a moment, Barissa hovered in the air, twisted to sneer at them.
"We will have blood!"
she roared, and the sound of her threat filled the room so that the very stones trembled. Then she let herself fall. Han ran to the window, looked out. The Night Sisters lightly dropped to the ground, scurried off like insects into the cover of the underbrush.